When it comes to remembering the dead, no one does it quite like the Irish.
Everybody turns up to a funeral in Ireland, and you go as much for the living as the dead. So you don't have to know the person who's died. You just need to know somebody who will be sad that they have died, and you go to show your support for the living. Unless it's a tragic death, it really is done with sort of verve and enthusiasm. But I've enjoyed myself at funerals more than at many weddings.
Gillian O'Brien grew up in Ireland, so she's been to lots of funerals. She's also an historian, and so she's very familiar with Ireland's long history of trauma and collective grief. And Gillian thinks a lot about how we remember loss, especially on a mass scale. A few years back, she set out on a dark tour of her country's many historic sites and memorials of death. Her book, The Darkness Echoing, Exploring Ireland's Places of Famine, Death, and Rebellion, came out during the pandemic, which seems weirdly appropriate. So I was thinking that a dark tour might be just what we could all use right now. We've survived something terrible, we're itching to travel, but we still collectively need to mourn. Just be warned, if your dark tour is anything like Gillian's, it could take longer than you think.
I planned it as quite a short little jaunt around the country, sort of stopping off at prison museums or museums associated with the famine or emigration. And I genuinely thought I could do it in a couple of months. And 2 years later, I was still on the road. Because you just meet people and they'd say, oh, but have you been to? Oh, you really should go there. And then you'd go off there and someone else would tell you to go another 2 miles down the road to all these small little museums. You know, at the end of a night of traveling, I'd go into the local pub and you'd end up sitting around talking about funerals and death and the tragedy of the local area or things. It sounds very miserable, but I really enjoyed a huge amount of my travels around the country. And I was a little bit sad when they ended.
Right. Well, tell me about one particular piece of history, the Great Famine. I guess in the US, we call it the Irish Potato Famine. For a long time, that wasn't even written about by historians, right?
Well, that's the really interesting thing. I mean, for a century, there was no academic textbook written in Ireland about that period. And still in Ireland, there aren't that many museums about the famine. And when you do start to look into the detail, you find that, you know, there's awful tragic stories, local stories of where neighbours turn upon neighbours and family turn upon themselves. And I think for more than a century, it was just too painful because those that survived may well have known those that died and may have overlooked them or may not have shared their food. And I think there were just really raw, difficult wounds that you couldn't make light of. And there was no levity in, and that sort of tragedy, it took us a century before we really were prepared to investigate.
It's hard with mass trauma on that scale. You know, I think the human mind can't really take in the numbers. It's been hard during the pandemic, for instance, to find ways to even comprehend what 2,000 deaths a day means. That must be true of the Great Famine, too.
I think that's really significant. I think a million means nothing. I don't know what a million is. I can't conceive what a million people could possibly be. One of the big problems telling these sort of stories is that so many of the people affected by the famine are the poor. And we don't have very many artifacts because poor people didn't have things. And it's really hard to tell the story of the famine without having things to show. But I remember finding or seeing a tiny shard of a mirror in a museum in County Roscommon. And it comes with a list of what a community of 4,000 people had. And they had almost nothing, but they had this one shard of mirror between them. And I remember thinking, those people had no need of a mirror. That's the sort of a thing you have with vanity and with having clothes to change and makeup to put on and hairbrushes to comb your hair. They had no need of any of that because they had nothing. They were a real subsistence economy. And they're the people who were absolutely devastated by the famine because there was no safety net for them. And seeing that mirror was something that just really stuck in my head because it's a tiny piece. It's set in a little wooden frame, but it's the size of the palm of your hand.
Wow.
There's something really moving, I think, about that in a way that you could give me all sorts of figures and they wouldn't emotionally connect.
Are there even any records? I imagine there aren't even many names or dates or anything.
What we don't have in a lot of cases is we don't know the names of people who died and people who were buried in mass graves. Because people were dying, there's one graveyard in Skibbereen in County Cork where they're estimated to be 9,000 people buried in this famine plot. And people were dying at such a rate and they were being buried very quickly because there was a fear of infection from them. Mm. And we just do not have names of all of those people. So we will never know the full number of people who died during the famine period.
Wow. So out of all of the historic sites connected with the famine that you visited, you mentioned the mirror, but are there any other, I mean, what's one place that you think, wow, they really did a good job?
For me, it's not so much the museums because there are so few artifacts, but for me, it's the graveyards. And there's one little tiny memorial in the west of Ireland in County Mayo, and it's just a little cross. It marks this walk that people did from this small village called Lewisburg, where they walked 12 miles to meet the Poor Law Guardians. And these were the people who made decisions about whether people would get extra relief or food. And when they got there, they were told they had to wait outside while the Poor Law Guardians ate their lunch, which is just, to me, the cruelty of that, to do that to starving people.
Yeah.
And then when they'd eaten their lunch, the guardians came out and said, no, we'll give you nothing. And so they had to walk back up this road. It's a road in the west of Ireland, which on a good day, it is absolutely beautiful. You've got hills on both sides. You've got a beautiful lake. It's amazing. And it's also heartbreaking because many people died on that walk back up to Lewisburg, to the town. And that one little cross where I always pull in when I'm going down the road towards Delphi, that I find is the most moving thing about the famine. That, and often there were these public works that were done where people built pointless things. So there were walls, stone walls built across the west of Ireland that had no purpose other than to give work to those who needed it. And it's those sort of things that really, yeah, I find terribly moving.
In their anonymity, really.
It's like the landscape of loss. But unless you know about it, you would just drive on.
Did it begin to get to you psychologically at all? It's a lot of sights of suffering.
It certainly made me very reflective about a lot of things and made me think about what sort of funeral I would like and to give a lot of orders about, you know, following my grandmother's footsteps. But I do think that because almost everywhere I went, I either went with friends or I went to talk to people afterwards. So I definitely decompressed after days, but I did need to do that. I could have written a very somber book, but I thought, well, nobody will read that if it's just pages of misery. So I wanted there to be levity in the book and humour and occasionally jokes.
Yes, it's very Irish of you.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
Yes, I liked it. There's such contradictory feelings about visiting any places like this. And I was remembering visiting New York City and staying in a hotel just opposite the 9/11 memorial, the site of the Twin Towers. And I had to kind of gear myself up to visit it. You know, I mean, I was there on vacation, but visiting the 9/11 memorial is not like going to MoMA. You don't go for pleasure or for entertainment. And so why go? Out of a sense of social responsibility to bear witness? Why? Why do we go and why does it matter that we go?
Yeah, I think you make a really interesting point, and it's something I think about quite a lot because that is part of dark tourism. And I think there's a spectrum of darkness. So going to something like that memorial, and you notice it's the same, I think, with concentration camps. Why do people go to those sites, which are absolutely heartbreaking? You know, one of the things that I remember when that memorial opened and there was a lot of discussion about what they would sell in the shop. And I think you can tell a lot about a dark tourist site by, are they selling things that are educational and is it books about it, or are they selling things that are exploitative or tacky? I mean, it's still very recent, 9/11. And yeah, is it as a memorial for those who died and their families, or who is it aimed at?
Yeah. I don't know if I would have, if I'd been staying all the way across town. I don't know whether I would have gone all the way across town on purpose to the 9/11 memorial, but, you know, staying in a hotel looking out the window on the site, I had to go. Maybe what I'm saying is, I think sometimes these are sacred sites.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to think of a sacred site as something good, but tragedy can make a site sacred.
Yeah, I think that is important. You know, when you're standing in that area, it's an area where thousands of people died. And I think to take a moment to note that is really important. I think it's important that people are remembered. That's all we've got really left. One of the things I love most in the world is going around old graveyards and reading the names of people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I would never know. And what it says maybe about what their job was or what children they had.
I feel exactly the same way about graveyards. Even if I don't know who this person was, all I have is the name and some dates. The fact that I'm taking a few minutes in my life today to just try to think about them, wonder who they were, that feels like some tiny, small gift I can put out into the world.
I completely agree. And I think there's something that's really hard to articulate about that, that I think it is emotional. It's funny because loads of people don't talk about how much they like graveyards. And as soon as I say, you know, my favorite thing in the world is a graveyard, and to walk around and look at the names and think about, oh, look, a Victorian graveyard, and look at all the names that you'd no longer hear. Or look, this name is now fashionable again.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things, the amount of people that kind of go, oh, actually, I really like doing that too. I just never tell anyone. I'm like, oh, you should. There's lots of us out there.
Oh, yeah. And just piecing together bits of history, especially at a family plot, and beginning to see, you know, who died when. And you can see, for instance, waves of disease come through. A terrible flu season, or wait, that was the 1918 flu, or a diphtheria epidemic, or whatever. That's, it's all fascinating.
I would do that anytime I go to somewhere I don't know, because if I go to, say, a local graveyard in Liverpool, you can see the amount of them that are shipping merchants or traders. And that's when Liverpool was, you know, that's how it got its wealth. It's my top tip for anyone going to visit anywhere is start with the cemeteries. Start with the dead and then work towards the living.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much. I was going to ask at the end of this, what lessons do you have for us? Things to think about when setting out on a dark tour of your own.
Well, I think identify a pub to go to at the end of the day, because you might need it depending on what your dark tourist site is. But I do think always start, even if it's not a tourist site, is start with the graveyards and be prepared to find that there is levity in doing some of the dark tourism sites, not the ones that are the darkest. But I think it's a really good way of, you know, we always look at the shiny things and the bright stuff, and that's certainly how we would like to portray everything. But there's real merit, I think, in looking at the other stories, and also in any museum, go and sort of look beyond the main cases. I always find the things that are more moving are the little things sort of stashed away in the back, that you can sort of learn something about a person rather than, as you said earlier, stories about the million, because the million mean nothing to us. We have to find the people.
Mm. Thank you so much for your advice. You make me long to have this pandemic end so we can get out and visit places again.
Oh, I know. I really miss being able to get into museums and out on sites. I'm hoping it happens soon.
Yeah, me too. Thank you so much for talking today.
You're very welcome.
That's historian Gillian O'Brien. We talked just before St. Patrick's Day. Her book is The Darkness Echoing, Exploring Ireland's Places of Famine, Death, and Rebellion.